They're a queer folk about, though I say it as shouldn't, you may think. He added with a wry smile, seeing Frodo's glance. And there have been even stranger travellers through Bree lately, he went on, watching Frodo's face. Frodo returned his gaze but said nothing, and Strider made no further sign. His attention seemed suddenly to be fixed on Pippin. To his alarm, Frodo became aware that the ridiculous young Took, encouraged by his success with the fat mare of Mickledelving, was now actually giving a comic account of Bilbo's farewell party. He was already giving an imitation of the speech, and was drawing near to the astonishing disappearance. Frodo was annoyed. It was a harmless enough tale for most of the local hobbits, no doubt. Just a funny story about those funny people away beyond the river. But some, old Butterbur, for instance, knew a thing or two, and had probably heard rumours long ago about Bilbo's vanishing. It would bring the name of Baggins to their minds, especially if there had been inquiries in Bree after that name. Frodo fidgeted, wondering what to do. Pippin was evidently much enjoying the attention he was getting, and had become quite forgetful of their danger. Frodo had a sudden fear that in his present mood he might even mention the ring, and that might well be disastrous. "You had better do something quick," whispered Strider in his ear. Frodo jumped up and stood on a table and began to talk. The attention of Pippin's audience was disturbed. Some of the hobbits looked at Frodo and laughed and clapped, thinking that Mr. Undale had taken as much ale as was good for him. Frodo suddenly felt very foolish, and found himself, as was his habit when making a speech, fingering the things in his pocket. He felt the ring on its chain, and quite unaccountably the desire came over him to slip it on and vanish out of the silly situation. It seemed to him, somehow, as if the suggestion came to him from outside, from someone or something in the room. He resisted the temptation firmly, and clasped the ring in his hand, as if to keep a hold on it and prevent it from escaping or doing any mischief. At any rate, it gave him no inspiration. He spoke a few very suitable words, as they would have said in the Shire. "We are all very much gratified by the kindness of your reception, and I venture to hope that my brief visit will help to renew the old ties of friendship between the Shire and Bree." And then he hesitated and coughed. Everyone in the room was now looking at him. "A song!" shouted one of the hobbits. "A song! A song!" shouted all the others. "Come on now, master, sing us something that we haven't heard before." For a moment Frodo stood gaping. Then, in desperation, he began a ridiculous song that Bilbo had been rather fond of, and indeed rather proud of, for he'd made up the words himself. It was about an inn, and that's probably why it came into Frodo's mind just then. Here it is in full. Only a few words of it are now, as a rule, remembered. "There is an inn, a merry old inn, beneath an old grey hill, and there they brew a beer so brown that the man in the moon himself came down one night to drink his fill. The ostler has a tipsy cat that plays a five-string fiddle, and up and down he runs his bow, now squeaking high, now purring low, now sawing in the middle. The landlord keeps a little dog that is mighty fond of jokes. When there's good cheer among the guests, he cocks an ear at all the jests and laughs until he chokes. They also keep a horned cow as proud as any queen, but music turns her head like ale and makes her wave her tufted tail and dance upon the green. And oh, the rows of silver dishes and the store of silver spoons, for Sunday there's a special pair, and these they polish up with care on Saturday afternoons. The man in the moon was drinking deep, and the cat began to wail. A dish and a spoon on the table danced, the cow in the garden madly pranced, and the little dog chased his tail. The man in the moon took another mug and then rolled beneath his chair, and there he dozed and dreamed of ale, till in the sky the stars were pale and dawn was in the air. Then the ostler said to his tipsy cat, "The white horses of the moon, they neigh and champ their silver bits, but their master's been and drowned his wits, and the sun'll be rising soon." So the cat on his fiddle played hey diddle diddle, a jig that would wake the dead. He squeaked and sawed and quickened the tune, while the landlord shook the man in the moon. "It's after three," he said. They rolled the man slowly up the hill and bundled him into the moon, while his horses galloped up in rear, and the cow came capering like a deer, and a dish ran up with a spoon. Now quicker the fiddle went deedle-dum-diddle, the dog began to roar. The cow and the horses stood on their heads, the guests all bounded from their beds and danced upon the floor. With a ping and a pong the fiddle strings broke, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such fun, and the Saturday dish went off at a run with a silver Sunday spoon. The round moon rolled behind the hill as the sun raised up her head. She hardly believed her fiery eyes, for though it was day, to her surprise, they all went back to bed. There was loud and long applause. Frodo had a good voice, and the song tickled their fancy. "Where's old Barley?" they cried. "He ought to hear this. Bob ought to learn his cat the fiddle, and then we'd have a dance." They called for more ale and began to shout. "Let's have it again, master. Come on now, once more." They made Frodo have another drink, and then began his song again, while many of them joined in, for the tune was well known, and they were quick at picking up words. It was now Frodo's turn to feel pleased with himself. He capered about on the table, and when he came a second time to the cow jumped over the moon, he leapt in the air, much too vigorously, for he came down bang into a tray of mugs, and slipped and rolled off the table with a crash, clatter, and bump. The audience all opened their mouths wide for laughter, and stopped short in gaping silence, for the singer disappeared. He simply vanished, as if he had gone slap through the floor without leaving a hole. The local hobbits stared in amazement, and then sprang to their feet and shouted for Barleyman. All the company drew away from Pippin and Sam, who found themselves left alone in a corner, and eyed darkly and doubtfully from a distance. It was plain that many people regarded them now as the companions of a travelling magician of unknown powers and purpose, for there was one swarthy Brelander who stood looking at them with a knowing and half-mocking expression that made them feel very uncomfortable. Presently he slipped out of the door, followed by the squint-eyed southerner. The two had been whispering together a good deal during the evening. Harry the gatekeeper also went out just behind them. Frodo felt a fool. Not knowing what else to do, he crawled away under the tables to the dark corner by Strider, who sat unmoved, giving no sign of his thoughts. Frodo leaned back against the wall and took off the ring. How it came to be on his finger he could not tell. He could only suppose that he had been handling it in his pocket while he sang, and that somehow it had slipped on when he stuck out his hand with a jerk to save his fall. For a moment he wondered if the ring itself had not played him a trick. Perhaps it had tried to reveal itself in response to some wish or command that was felt in the room. He didn't like the looks of the men that had gone out. "Well," said Strider when he reappeared, "why did you do that? Worse than anything your friends could have said. You have put your foot in it, or should I say your finger?"
"I don't know what you mean," said Frodo, annoyed and alarmed.
"Oh, yes, you do," answered Strider. "But we'd better wait until the uproar has died down. Then, if you please, Mr. Baggins, I should like a quiet word with you."
"What about?"
asked Frodo, ignoring the sudden use of his proper name. "A matter of some importance to us both," answered Strider, looking Frodo in the eye. "You may hear something to your advantage."
Very well, said Frodo, trying to appear unconcerned. I'll talk to you later. Meanwhile, an argument was going on by the fireplace. Mr. Butterbur had come trotting in, and he was now trying to listen to several conflicting accounts of the event at the same time.
I saw him, Mr. Butterbur, said a hobbit. Or, leastways, I didn't see him. If you take my meaning, he just vanished into thin air, in a manner of speaking.
You don't say, Mr. Mugwort, said the landlord, looking puzzled.
Yes, I do, replied Mugwort, and I mean what I say, what's more.
Then there's some mistake somewhere, said Butterbur, shaking his head. There was too much of that Mr. Underhill to go vanishing into thin air, or into thick air, as is more likely in this room.
Well, where is he now? Cried several voices.
How should I know? He's welcome to go where he will, so long as he pays in the morning. There's Mr. Took now. He's not vanished.
Well, I saw what I saw, and I saw what I didn't, said Mugwort obstinately.
And I say there's some mistake, repeated Butterbur, picking up the tray and gathering up the broken crockery. Of course there's a mistake, said Frodo. I haven't vanished. Here I am. I've just been having a few words with Strider in the corner. He came forward into the firelight, but most of the company backed away, even more perturbed than before. They were not in the least satisfied by his explanation that he crawled away quickly under the tables after he had fallen. Most of the hobbits and the men of Bree went off then and there in a huff, having no fancy for further entertainment that evening. One or two gave Frodo a black look and departed muttering among themselves. The dwarves and the two or three strange men that still remained got up and said good night to the landlord, but not to Frodo and his friends. Before long no one was left but Strider, who sat on, unnoticed by the wall. Mr. Butterbur didn't seem much put out. He reckoned, very probably, that his house would be full again on many future nights, until the present mystery had been thoroughly discussed.
"Now, what have you been doing, Mr. Underhill?" he asked. "Frightening my customers and breaking up my crock with your acrobatics?"
"I'm very sorry to have caused any trouble," said Frodo. "It was quite unintentional, I assure you. A most unfortunate accident."
All right, Mr. Underhill, but if you're going to do any more tumbling or conjuring or whatever it was, you'd best warn folk beforehand, and warn me. We're a bit suspicious round here of anything out of the way uncanny, if you understand me, and we don't take to it all of a sudden.
I shan't be doing anything of the sort again, Mr. Butterbur, I promise you. And now I think I'll be getting to bed. We shall be making an early start. Will you see that our ponies are ready by 8 o'clock?
Very good. But before you go, I should like a word with you in private, Mr. Underhill. Something has just come back to my mind that I ought to tell you. I hope that you'll not take it amiss. When I've seen to a thing or two, I'll come along to your room, if you're willing.
Certainly, said Frodo, but his heart sank. He wondered how many private talks he would have before going to bed, and what they would reveal. Were these people all in league against him? He began to suspect even old Butterbur's fat face of concealing dark designs.